Hey, good afternoon, everybody. As I've said before, please do not sit too comfortably. Stay as much as you can in your Zazen position. Relax, but not too comfortable. So today I'd like to look at Shui Feng's turtle-nose snake, which is case number 34 in Zen Echoes. This book, as you know, contains 43 classic koan with verse commentaries by three female Zen masters, one from the 12th century, Miao Zung, and the other two from the 17th century, Bao Chir and Zhu Kui. Zui Feng's snake also shows up in the Blue Cliff Records number 22 and in the Book of Equanimity, case number 24. So let me read it to you, and then I'll read you the verses of Bao Chir and Zhu Kui. Sui Feng said to the assembly, "On South Mountain, there's a turtle-nosed snake." A footnote says the snake is a cobra. "So on South Mountain, there's a turtle-nosed snake. You must all have a close look at it." Zheng Qing said, "Today, in this very hall, there is definitely someone who has lost his body and life." A monk told Xuansha about this. Xuansha said, "Only Brother Zheng Qing would put it that way. I wouldn't say it like that." "What would you say, Your Reverence?" asked the monk. Xuansha responded, "Why use South Mountain?" Yin Men picked up his staff and threw it down before Shui Feng and made a gesture of fright. Now, the verse by Bao Chir. She wrote, "The turtle-nosed snake of South Mountain is extraordinarily strange. There is no way it can be drawn, and there is no way it can be painted. If you play with it, its rancid-smelling fumes will fill the great tongue. Dare I inquire, what patch-robe monk has ever even seen its bones?" Zhu Kui wrote, "Summoning is easy, chasing away is hard. If in losing the body and mind one vacillates, the staff tip suddenly thrust out startles everyone. Hold on to South Mountain and look at it carefully. Mist vague and hazy, grasses overgrown and wild." Although old Shui pretends to be an old hand, when you think about it, what he says is utter nonsense. So for those of you more versed in the Sino-Japanese names, Shui Feng is Seppo, and he was the teacher of Chong Qing, Chokke, Yan Sha, Gensha, and Yun Men, Wu Man. Shui Feng Seppo was one of the greats in Zen lore, and along with Yen Tao, who's Ganto, both were Dharma heirs of Dei Shan. Sui Feng had a lovely, insightful, and quite vibrant list of successors, and his line was very successful in cultivating the dark soil of Dharma. He, however, was as much known for his ill-lit, dingy, and blurred Dharma eye as a student. He worked very hard as a student, but failure for many, many years was the only fruit that he bore. For this reason, among others, he has been favored and adored by Zen students throughout the centuries. His teachers often refer to him as a black lacquer bucket, which in Zen speak means he was a dumb shit. But he refused to quit, which for some of you proves that his nickname was correct. Many students, however, have been inspired by him. He was slow, but steady, unclear, but diligent, and terribly confused, but persistent. Once he and his Dharma brother Yentao, who was all the things Shui Fang wasn't, he was quick, readily insightful, and exceptionally clear-eyed. Once the two of them were snowed in on Tortoise Mountain, where they found shelter in a small inn, Yentao, Ganto, used the opportunity to rest. But each time he opened his eyes, he saw Shui Fang doing zazen. Shui Fang sat hour after hour, he sat day after day, and he sat night after night. And though Yentao encouraged Shui Fang to relax and rest, Shui Fang refused, touching his heart and saying, "This is not yet at peace. How could I possibly rest?" And so he sat through the cold days, and he sat through the dark, bleak nights. Finally, Yentao asked his young friend to tell him about his zazen and his understanding, limited though it may be. Shui Fang started telling of his Zen experiences, but Yentao quickly interrupted and yelled, "Haven't you heard that what enters through the gate is not the family treasure? Let it flow forth from your heart, covering heaven and earth." Suddenly, hearing those words, Shui Fang woke up. And one book incorrectly says he then ran outside yelling, "Today on Tortoise Mountain, I have finally gained the way." If that saying were so, Shui Fang had not yet understood a single thing. In fact, a more accurate translation is, Shui Fang ran into the snow yelling over and over, "Today, Tortoise Mountain has finally gained the way. Today, Tortoise Mountain has finally awakened." At that point in someone's practice, Eiken Roshi was fond of saying, "And now your practice begins again, right here." Shui Fang's feeling similarly, I think, went into the mountains for some number of years after this to clarify, to cultivate, and to mature, and then only came out to teach others about that which does not come in the gate after those many years. Now, this is a little off topic, but I'd like to tell you a story which some of you have already heard. Many, many, many years ago, I was in San Francisco walking around the streets and drinking too much coffee with Ross Bolliter, a teacher in our lineage from Perth, Australia. We had heard a local Diamond Sangha group had sitting each night from 7 to 9 p.m., and we decided to attend. Unfortunately, we arrived at 6:55 p.m., and the leader of the group was exasperated with us because he had no time to go over the forms and to show us how to sit. He whispered, "Just follow along and do the best you can, and don't squiggle." We went into the Zendo and sat. And Ross proceeded to sit and not move for 2 hours, skipping all the kinhins. Neither of us at the end of the service took sutra books for the closing recitation, having the material memorized. After the last bows, as we were going to the door to exit, the leader of the group bustled over and said, "Who are you guys?" Ross, without a smile, but with a wicked glint, said, "He's Seppo. I'm Ganto." And then we walked out into the Tenderloin for another cuppa. Not another cup of water. So Shui Feng said to the assembly, "On South Mountain, there's a turtle-nosed snake. You must all have a look at it." Shui Feng met the turtle-nosed snake in Yantou's snow-driven words, and the bite went deep, killing all Shui Feng's long-cherished ideas and notions. Shakyamuni Buddha was bitten by the same snake, though we called it a Venus star. And Maha Kashapa was also bitten by the twirling flower. All Zen students, good or bad, rabbit or tortoise-like, quick or dim, must have a very close look at the snake, and if lucky, be bitten by it. And with that fatal bite, everything you imagine you are, everything you imagine that you are not, will dissipate. Then you too will cry out on Tortoise Mountain as Tortoise Mountain. You too will cry out on South Mountain as South Mountain. Chan Ching said, "Today in this very hall, there is definitely someone who has lost his body and life." What do you think of Chan Ching's response? It is straightforward and clear, but maybe it is too straightforward, maybe too clear. What do you think? How would you have responded to Shui Feng's, "There is a snake on South Mountain. You must all have a close look at it"? And I wonder, as you're sitting here, somewhat relaxed, somewhat relieved, a little less anxiety, did you meet the snake on Tuesday night? Did you meet the snake on Wednesday night? It was slithering around that night, and the next, and the next. Did you see it? Or were you avoiding it with your strongly held preferences and opinions? How did you practice those nights with the poisonous snake wrapped around your arm, hissing? How did you not avoid, but not ignore? How did you not clutch, but not push away? As I said, you may be feeling some relief right now, but be true with yourself. Where were you? Where was the snake on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? Did you avoid? Did you hold tight? What kept you from letting go completely and allowing its bite to sink deep? Swansha said, I wouldn't say it that way. And when asked what he would say, he replies, why use South Mountain? Which I take him to mean, why locate the snake on South Mountain only? Swansha is making a good point. Why only that place? Isn't the snake always also on North Mountain, East Mountain, and West Mountain? Isn't it also on the mountains between those cardinal compass points? In fact, isn't the snake sliding right now very near to your Zafu? Isn't it gliding this moment under your altar and slipping under the door? Swansha is saying that it is everywhere. He is saying it is everything. And of course, that is a valid consideration. Yet in Doka-san, when I ask, where is Mu? And the reply is everywhere. Or when I ask, what is Mu? And the reply is everything. The bell promptly rings. Similarly, in Doka-san, when I say, who hears? And the response is everyone or no one. Again, the swift bell sounding. Why is that? Swansha says everywhere, everything. And yet the bell rings. Zen is immediate, specific, and personal. It isn't about or like. It isn't generalized, abstract, or impersonal. It is embodied in relationship, specific, real, alive relationships. Everything, everywhere, everyone or no one. Entirely miss the blood-to-blood, knee-to-knee entanglement of reality. Swansha is correct. Why only South Mountain? But I want to smell, I want to touch, and I want to feel and see the snake. And I know that's true for all of you, or you wouldn't be doing this on this sunny weekend. Yun Men makes this very point by picking up his staff and throwing it down before Shui Fang and immediately making a gesture of fright. This is crying out on Tortoise Mountain as Tortoise Mountain. And this is crying out on South Mountain as South Mountain. The staff, Yun Men, is the snake, and Yun Men is simultaneously personalizing that encounter. But again, right now I ask, where is the snake in your room, in your house, in your practice? And if you actually see it, hear it, or feel it, then that isn't the true snake at all. Because there only is shh, no sound, no one to make the sound, and no one to hear the sound. Simply Bao Chur wrote, the turtle-nosed snake of South Mountain is extraordinarily strange. There is no way it can be drawn, and there is no way it can be painted. If you play with it, its rancid smelling fumes will fill the great tongue. Dare I inquire, she asks, what patch-robed monk has ever even seen its bones? Usually I ask Jeff to help widen the possible translations as he looks at the Chinese characters for the verses. But I wasn't able to do that this time, so I'll fumble through with what is given. That being said, I'm not entirely sure how or why the snake is strange. Strange at its root means foreign or alien. And this snake is actually closer to you than your own breath. This very place is South Mountain. And the snake has been inhabiting this terrain from the beginningless beginning. Maybe it seems alien or foreign because we so often walk about in our lives with eyes closed and don't see much of anything other than our own projections and perceptions. And when we finally drop our squinty myopic leanings, what we may see seem new, thus somewhat foreign. I would change the translation, not knowing the character, and say really that the snake is extraordinarily unique, unique to each circumstance and condition. And it can't be drawn or painted because of its endless shape-shifting and skin-shedding. So it is always fresh, original, and new. Drawing or painting the snake would be like drawing the tracks of the raven as it flies across the moonless night. Or it would be like painting a white elk on the snowed in Tortoise Mountain. Boucher's next two lines read, if you play with it, its rancid smelling fumes will fill the great tongue. Dare I inquire what patch-robed monk has ever seen its bones? I can think of these lines in a few ways, but here are two. And if you have other thoughts or insights, please don't hesitate to tell me. I might say if you play with a snake, it certainly isn't the true snake, and your mistaken notions will smell to the heavens. As Yan Tao said to Shui Feng, the family treasure does not pass through the gates. If you think you got it, you most certainly do not. And your carrying on will stink. For what patch-robed monk has ever even seen the snake bones? Never mind, played with it. And a second way to play with these lines might be, I am not sure about all snakes, but the snakes I've handled do release a horrible smelling, oily excretion, which if handled long enough would kill all your perceptions and notions. That smell would kill all your thoughts, feelings, and sensations. It would kill all your wants and desires. In fact, it would kill each and all things, outside or inside. And nothing would remain. And in this complete dying away of everything, in this complete dropping away, who would be left? What would be left? Dare I inquire, who or what would be standing to see what does not exist, the bones of a snake? And now I'll read you Zuque's verse. Zuque wrote, summoning is easy, chasing away is hard. If in losing the body and self one vacillates, the staff tip suddenly thrust out startles everyone. Hold on to South Mountain and look at it carefully. Mist vague and hazy, grass is overgrown and wild. Although old Shui pretends to be an old hand, when you think about it, what he says is nonsense. Summoning is easy because the snake is right here. It is here as the gleam in your eye. It is the glare of your candlelight. And it's the dust shining in the sunlight. It is your chewing, walking, sitting, and standing. And it too is the mountain steps and the creek's babble. And really, there is no way to chase it away. It is before and after. Compared to it, heaven and earth are narrow. Often, however, we vacillate and ignore its constant hissing and tongue lashing. But fortunately, the staff of Yunmen is suddenly thrust out. Fortunately, Shakyamuni continues to twirl a flower right before our eyes. And Yentao's shout is still echoing. Listen, listen. Also, it is right here in the bus backfiring. It's in the dog yapping or in the babies giggling and squiggling. The snake is ever present. Just look. Look carefully, very carefully, and you will notice, you will touch the mist vague and hazy, and grasses overgrown and wild. Look carefully, and you will touch the wild, the wildness that is before peace and war, the wildness that's before anarchy and convention, the wildness that is before brutality and compassion. The snake of South Mountain is untamed. She is unnameable, unsayable, and truly unknowable. She is wild. Wildness itself, and to ignore her is then to ignore your own wildness, which means to ignore your own gifts and talents. To ignore her is to ignore your own genius. It's to ignore your own voice, and it's to ignore your own ability to improvise in any situation. And this might be another way to say it. The night before our horse, Kassar, who had been with us for 25 years, died, I was worried and fretting as I went to sleep. I was worried, knowing full well of his condition. That night, I woke suddenly at 1:15 and went to see if he was all right. I went to see if he was comfortable enough. I walked out into the dark and walked towards the pasture. And he was standing where he often did, but he was different. He had just swallowed the moon and the stars, and every hair on him, his mane and his tail were, his mane and his tail, his legs and his neck, his eyes and even his gums, they were all lit, and he shimmered moonlight in the black night. And I stopped walking and realized he was fine, that he was entirely himself. He was filled with the wildness that is easy to summon and hard to chase away. And each one of you are invited to swallow the moon, to swallow the stars and the clouds and the rain, allowing you to glimmer and be alighted with what you are from the beginningless and endless.